Welcome to the Head Ballet Podcast. This is the place to come to hear my guests discuss with me, Paul Abbott, their favourite novelty songs, the funny, the weird, the daft, and the outright baffling tunes that have been skipping and dancing around in their heads for years. Everybody loves something that could be considered novel, so why not celebrate it? My guest for this episode of the podcast is actor Paul Putner. I'm pretty sure you don't need me to run down the entirety of his credits, but if you don't know him from his work with Lee and Herring, the guys from Little Britain, or Peter Serafinovich, for example, you might know him from his time in The Bill, or maybe Downton Abbey, something like that. It's always a delight to see him pop up on the screen, and I was absolutely thrilled when he agreed to come on the show, and I was even more thrilled when he told me what single he'd chosen to bring along. You might have noticed, though, that this episode is up with a little explicit tag on the podcast player, and that's because there's a bit of swearing and lewd content in the stuff we're discussing today. Now, Paul's appearance on this episode marks the end of season one of the podcast. I really do want to say thank you to all of my guests who've all been absolutely brilliant, and also to say thank you to you for listening. You can continue to support the podcast by sharing the links with friends, or by rating and reviewing the show in whatever podcast player you use. I'll be back with some Christmas treats as well before too long, and then I'll be bringing you a new season of the show sometime in the new year. Thanks for listening, and enjoy the episode. So, Paul, from looking on your Twitter feed, it betrays you a bit as a collector of some pretty cool and bizarre records, and also as someone who certainly used to like to draw and make comics yourself. Was music and art a big thing for you growing up?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I grew up in a household that was, I know this is a cliche, oh, it was full of music. but it was. My mother used to play records a lot on a Saturday, cleaning the house, normally show tunes and a bit of disco. And my father liked his classical music and his jazz. And my brother and I would put our records on. So we did enjoy music. My mum would be singing along and we'd all be dancing around the living room occasionally. So that was my first introduction to music. I used to watch a lot of television, and of course I was, you know, entranced by TV theme tunes and Top of the Pops, like most young people of my generation.
Yeah,
yeah. So and the comics. Well, again, my grandparents used to always buy me. I was quite spoilt. The latest comics, when they'd come down and see me, so I'd get like six issues of Shiver and Shake and Whizzer and Chips and Whoopee comic and the Beano and Core and Knockout, all of these. I loved them, and I'd get the annuals at Christmas, and it sort of inspired me to draw my own comic strips. I've managed to find some old ones recently in my parents' attic, which is a treasure trove. I used to crank them out with a mate called Robin, called Yippie Comic, and I think we must have done about 20 issues, and ooh, I think about nine remain. But I don't know who. It was only for our own pleasure. There was another friend, Adrian, who did Freaky Comic, and we were sort of rivals. His comics were always. He wasn't as good as artists as we were, but his comics were a lot funnier because they were so lewd. he was deconstructing and parodying comics long before Viz Comic. so he was a bit of a pioneer in that respect. He was very scatological.
Oh, lovely. Well, I mean, yes. I think that leads us very neatly via your history and what you've just said there onto sort of what you've brought along to get us going for this episode. Could you tell everyone what single you've chosen to bring on the Head Ballet Podcast today?
Right, I'm going to pick it up now.
Oh,
I have in my hands Bags of Fun with Buster, the hit Viz Comic pop record by Johnny Japes and the Jesticles.
And it's fun and Japes and Merry Rollocks with Buster. Bags of fun with a Buster and his super
Womp.
There you go. That was, came out in 1987.
Yes, indeed. Comes out on Fulchester Records, Viz's own record label.
And Fulchester, of course, was the team that Billy the Fish played for.
Yeah, indeed. Yes. And it gets the serial number Viz 1, which is as simple as it's going to be when you're the first record on Viz's label.
That's quite right. And it's got a lurid cover where it's... Yeah. I spoke to one of the Viz artists, Simon Thorpe, and he said that you could tell it's Graham Dury's picture of Buster Gonad on the front, but he said it's just an enlarged photocopy of it. And and the Chris Donald does the wonderful sketch on the back of Buster Gonad trying to get into Top of the Pops with the doorman saying, "I don't care what your name is, you're not bringing those in here."
Which, reflects something on the record itself, doesn't it?
Yes.
So I suppose, just in case anyone listening to this doesn't know what Viz Comic is, can you sort of explain it for the uninitiated?
Viz Comic was, and still is, a satirical pastiche of the old-fashioned comic strips from the 1950s, 60s and 70s, with pastiches of local newspaper articles and tabloid newspapers. But it was mainly made up of strips of these characters, which would be taking the mickey out of existing characters. So you get the bottom inspectors, which was a sort of piss take of the Gestapo. You had Terry Futwit, Felix and his amazing underpants, Johnny Fart Pants, Roger Irrelevant, Major Misunderstanding, lots of The Black Bag, all kinds of strips and characters, which were taking off the characters you would get in Whizzer and Chips, like Biffa Bacon was, I think it was Bully Beef and Chips from one of the comics, and they were piss takes of existing characters.
It is amazing when you go back and look at something like Whizzer and Chips once you've got into reading Viz, and you see how, I mean, Whizzer and Chips and things like that were amazing. Because they turned out a lot of material. So they had to come up with all sorts of characters. Obviously, they had some of these flagship characters. Mm. But then if you go through a Whizzer and Chips annual now, you look at things and think, blimey, they couldn't have got much out of that. But then you'll turn to Viz and think, oh, blimey, Viz have parodied something that you... It's just...
Yes.
It's an exceptional parody.
Yeah.
But also taken through this hugely grotesque sort of... scatological in some cases, hypersexual in others, just rude and daft in many things.
It's quite political as well in its own way. On the face value, if you look at some of the characters like Sid the Sexist or Militant, they are having something to say. It's not just this reactionary writing that they're doing. Yeah, but it's interesting you talking about all the characters and Whizzer and Chips, and going back to the comic I used to draw, Yippee. I did eventually make a Yippee annual, which I took to school, because the only people who ever saw the comics was me and my mates and possibly my mum and dad.
Yeah.
And it went down really well, showing it around the class. And it inspired me to perhaps pursue this as a career. Now, this ties into Viz quite oddly, is that my grandfather, who used to get me the comics, used to give a lift to a gentleman called Bob Painter.
Right.
And he was an editor who worked for IPC magazines and comics, who used to do a lot of those comics. And he worked in King's Reach Tower, which is down near Waterloo, which is where New Musical Express, Melody Maker, loads of other magazines, and a lot of the comics were published from this very building. And so my granddad organised it for me to meet Bob Painter, to see if I had any promise as a budding cartoonist. So I was about 11 years old. I went up with my mum, got to King's Reach Tower and met this Bob Painter, who was a nice man. He was a bit like Danny LaRue, the drag act, if anyone remembers him. But I was a bit crestfallen, because after showing my wares and he looked at it and said, yes, this is, I can see the potential, but you're quite young, and I think you should go away and practice. One day you might be able to come and work for me. But the thing that put me off drawing comics after that day in Waterloo was I wanted to do all the comic. And of course, if you're in a sausage factory making comics like Whizzer and Chips, they have a guy who comes up with the idea, a guy who draws it, a guy who inks it, a guy who does the lettering, a guy who colorizes it, and someone who comes along with Tippex and finesses it.
Yeah.
And I said, I want to do it all. And he said, well, there's not many artists who do that. So it was like a factory. So I came home and feeling a bit miserable about it. But how it ties in with Viz Comic is that Bob Painter saw the Viz guys on television promoting their comic in about 1984. So this would have been about 6 years after I met Bob, and offered them a deal. Would they like to come in and chat? But the outcome for them was the IPC were too nervous about the content of Viz.
Yeah.
So they got ultimately rejected by Bob Painter. So it's funny how these how it comes together like that.
Indeed. But it's certainly that meeting for the Viz lads didn't matter in the end, because we're up to something like issue 300, I think, has just come out of Viz, which is a phenomenal success.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it celebrated its Ruby anniversary last year. I mean, 40 years this Viz comic has been going. It's astonishing, really.
Indeed, yeah. My favourite thing with Viz, and I must say, my reading of it has dropped off a little bit since I learnt to drive not long ago, because what I'd normally do is if I was going to visit my mum from here in Liverpool down to Stoke, we'd stop in Crewe because we'd have to change trains, and I'd always buy a copy of Viz in Crewe train station, read it on the next train down to my mum's, and then give it to my stepdad because he likes Viz as well. Since I've learnt to drive, I haven't been reading Viz, so I must make an effort to catch up with it.
That is very true. Mark Ellen, the music journalist, was once asked, why do you always put the Beatles and Pink Floyd on the front of Mojo magazine and Q magazine and whatnot? And he said, because in publishing, we have a saying of idiot in a hurry, which is a bit like a Viz comic as well. It's idiot in a hurry, which means you've got to catch a train. So you run into W.H. Smith's and you think, that looks good.
And,
and Viz comic for me was one of those, like you say, it was something you grab to read on the train. When I was at drama school in the 80s, when Viz was at its height, I used to come home to my parents in Sussex from London, and I'd always buy a copy when it came out. I think it was bi-monthly then, and then would find a carriage which didn't have anyone I knew, particularly friends' fathers, on the commuter belt. So I could sit there with a packet of Watsits and probably a can of Hofmeister and chuckle along reading Viz, avoiding the gaze of anyone that came into the carriage.
Oh, no, it's brilliant.
Good times.
Yeah, it is great. And for a long time, I was quite, I don't think scared is the word, but I was a bit sort of nervous of it because it seemed so, for when I was little, it seemed so sort of adult. But I mean, the funny thing is, when you get a bit older, it's in many ways, it's really puerile. But it's what I was really pleased to discover with Viz. It's also very, very surreal and very, very clever. But then I don't know if we now pivot back to the single, whether you describe Bags of Fun with Buster as surreal and clever. It's definitely funny.
Yes. Buster Gonad. Yeah, I don't think there's any hidden depths of political satire going on there. No, he was Buster Gonad had what was described as unfeasibly large testicles.
Yes.
And he believed that naively they were imbued with these superpowers.
Cusack Lamb with his cobblers clad in a disguise of some form. When the cosmic power from a meteorite shower made them swell beyond the norm. And now, here he comes to save mankind.
Which a lot of the characters from Viz often think, like Gilbert Ratchet, who has his little Barbie doll, talking Barbie doll strapped to a trolley. He thinks that's magic. Davy Jones has a lot of these. Tommy's miniature grandpa, where grandpa's obviously got a bit of dementia and thinks he's the size of a mouse, and he isn't. I love those sort of ridiculous conceits of the cartoons. Yeah, yeah. So that's Buster Gonad. He was a regular one. He, like I mentioned before, he was drawn by Graham Dury. Another reason why I bought this single was the fact that it was produced by one of my favourite ever bands, XTC.
Yeah,
who were a band that came out in the late 70s. They're a kind of new wave power pop act, which went on to become far more and very unusual, well-crafted pop music. If you've never heard of them before, they're from Swindon, and they're not a going concern these days, but all the members are still making music. But two of them, Andy Partridge and David Gregory, were massive fans of this comic.
Yeah.
And so they thought, because John Brown, who was the publisher for Viz Comic, worked for Virgin, who was XTC's label at the time, they thought, well, if we can get it to John, he might be able to ask the Viz lads if they would be interested in us making a novelty single for them.
Yeah.
And Chris Donald said, you know, yeah, why not? And that's how it all came about. They were fans and offered to make a record for them. So along with Andy Partridge and Gregzy, they brought in Neville Farmer, who sort of co-wrote the lyrics. He was a record producer, a filmmaker, and a writer. He wrote one of the XTC biographies, so that's how they knew him. He was a huge fan. And his mucker was the fabulous comedy singer, actor, songwriter, John Otway. I don't know if your listeners will have heard of him. Very funny man. He was a big fan of Viz too. John Otway suggested, why don't we do Scooter Dolphin Boy? But Viz comic had already killed the character off. So they went for Buster Gonad instead.
Yeah. And he's definitely was one of the flagship characters around that time. I think he's doesn't appear so often these days, does he? But around then, Buster Gonad was definitely one of the key characters. And as you say, the entire conceit is that he has large testicles. and that's about as far as it goes.
It's a very eye-watering strip to read, isn't it, if you're a bloke? It's like, So they decided to make this demo. Now, I know XTC boys a little bit, so I contacted David and Andrew to see what memories they had. And Partridge says he remembers that John Otway and Neville Farmer, they came round to his house on the day of the Hungerford massacre.
Oh, blimey.
Yeah, yeah. So it was a strange day to hear the demo and discuss how to do it. Neville Farmer, he thought that maybe it should have a kind of ska beat. But then after that, it sort of mutated into this sort of bizarre kind of progressive reggae. Yeah, very much like a sort of Bonzo Doodah band type of feel to it, with a bit of the white reggae artist from the 70s, Judge Dredd, who used to sing in this kind of cod Jamaican accent of these very smutty songs. So lyrically, they were going for a Judge Dredd. He was from Kent. So that was the vibe they were going for.
Yeah, they're definitely a Bonzos. The first thing I thought when I was listening to this is I can hear the Bonzos in this, and Viv Stanchel's solo stuff as well, which I'm sure certainly Andy Partridge would be a big fan of, I'm sure.
Oh, yes.
There's a song on Keensham, the fourth Bonzos album, called The Bride Stripped Bare by Bachelors, which has got a section with someone saying, you can have a drink in the dressing room, lads, but you can't come into club looking like that. And all the little sort of speech interjections in this record sound just like that as well.
You can have a drink in your dressing room, lads, but you can't come into club looking like that. You can't have that.
Look, I don't care what your name is, you're not bringing them on my bus, so off it.
Yeah, yeah, I can imagine that was a big influence. I mean, he even mentions, I was trying to think of cartoon characters mentioned in in pop records from comic strips. And of course, Lord Snooty and his pals.
Yes. Lord Snooty's giant poisoned electric head.
Yeah. So I think, yes, it's in that sort of tradition, isn't it? Definitely. But a lot a lot more lewd with the lyrics.
Yeah, definitely. So do you want to tell us what the story of the song then? What happens in this song? Well, nothing right. really happens, but let's have a look at some of what goes on in it.
Right. I mean, just the opening line. Who's that dragging what looks like a pink sack of spanners down the road? His swollen folly on a supermarket trolley to alleviate the load. It's like the way it's just so erudite. Yes. Testicular tomfoolery to the rescue of humanity. It looks a lot of balls to me. it's very witty. And they were saying they were very proud of finding the rhymes for bollocks. Without the aid of a rhyming dictionary.
Yes.
Because I think that it frolics, alcoholics.
Yeah, because they make a point of it, of not saying the word bollocks during the course of the actual song for the most part.
That's right.
So it's a clever rhyme, yes, with a word that you don't actually hear, which is another sort of layer of joke on top of it.
It's a bit like the visual joke used sublimely in the Austin Powers films where you're naked, but every time you move, there's always an object hiding your privates. It's like that. They're just about to say bollocks, and then they manage to just come in with the chorus. Yeah, it with Buster Gonad's ball burst bouts, bags of fun. Yeah, they come in like like Ronnie Barker might.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
Might have also influenced them with his wordplay.
Yeah. Definitely. I think my favourite rhyme, such as it is the word alcoholics. Because it's this notion that he cures mutes and alcoholics. I wonder if they're references to specific Buster Gonad strips where he has, via some bizarre set of circumstances, cured a mute and an alcoholic, possibly, in there.
I wouldn't be at all surprised. How he cures mutes and alcoholics when they the other thing that makes this so wonderful is John Otway's style of singing. I cannot recommend enough for you to check out. It's the way he understates things, and he often sort of speak sings the lyrics, and the way he scans it.
Yeah,
like it's the way he goes. His enormous nuts not far behind. And they're not the salted kind. So he just adds it in as this. But if you listen to some of his other cover versions, like Billy Don't Be a Hero, check it out. It's so funny.
Billy Don't Be a Hero. But don't be a Billy Don't Be a Hero. Come back and make me your wife. And as Billy started to go, she said, keep your pretty head low. Oh, shit. Billy, don't be a hero, come back to me. Well, I heard his fiancée got a letter.
I can't explain it. He's so funny. And his version of Blockbuster, which is on YouTube.
All right.
You should check it out. It's just the way he kind of throws these powerful or these poignant lines away, you know. Just check out Blockbuster, and his version of I Am the Walrus is quite funny. The way he says, Oompa, Oompa, stick it up your jumper. it's a sort of naivety to it. He's very, very funny man. So I think he adds a lot, his singing style as well.
It's very charming, and it's funny that obviously both Viz and this record essentially emerge out of sort of a post-punk attitude as well.
Yeah.
But the other thing to keep in mind is, of course, XTC, this is 1987, this comes out, XTC have just done Skylarking the year before, which is one of the most polished albums they've done. Not necessarily that they were that happy about it. They should have got Todd Rundgren in to produce this and see what happens. Yeah, that would have been interesting.
And also it ties in with the fact that Johnny Japes and the Jesticles is another pseudonym that XTC were very keen on in the 80s.
Mm.
In 1987, they were being the Dukes of Stratosphere again.
Yeah.
Which was their sort of alter ego 60s psychedelic imaginary band. In fact, if you listen to 25 O'Clock, the track from the 25 O'Clock mini album, you can see they recycle a riff, a guitar riff, which appears in Bags of Fun with Buster.
For time has made me wait too long.
Watch out for that revolving door. Oh, Buster, they really look incredibly sore. Especially since you dragged them through that powerful cleaning agent someone's got.
They were the Three Wise Men. They did a Christmas single called Thanks for Christmas. They've been Terry and the Love Men, Collins Hermits. So they do like to wear masks.
Yes, especially as they were trapped in a record contract as well, I think. So pseudonyms always handy when you're when you've got problems with record contracts.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I was looking into other things that Viz might have put out. I thought, well, if this is Viz 1, surely there must be other Viz things. And I know we've done a bunch of Viz spin-offs, of which I think we should get to a couple of those in a bit. But they certainly put out a Viz 2, which was MC Billy Vanilli Ice Cream Tea, featuring the FU Posse, which is a sing-along of Fulchester United, Billy the Fish single, that I can't find a copy of online at all.
No, it's very rare.
Half time here at Fulchester Studios. What's going to happen next?
We're all going to sing along.
Fulchester United.
Thing you've got to remember about going back to Bags of Fun with Buster, that they only pressed 1,000 copies. So I think they go for about 10 quid on Discogs. And Chris Donald, the old editor, just said he still had boxes of them in his loft years later.
Yeah.
He said, we weren't anticipating a hit record and we didn't get one. Which I like that. Yeah, so they had boxes of it. And I think they probably had boxes of the Billy the Fish single.
Yeah, but so I wonder if they also had boxes of... Because they later, in 1992, they got like Stock and Waterman from Stock, Aitken and Waterman to do a Fat Slags single, a cover of Summer Holiday.
Yeah, as Simon Thorpe, he said, a shockingly rotten record that vanished without trace.
To do a duet with Cliff Richard next.
Oh, I wouldn't mind doing it with him at all.
Ah! We're going where the sun shines brightly.
We're going where the sea is blue.
Also, they wrote a follow-up single for Harry Enfield.
Ah.
After his 88 success with Loads of Money, doing Up the House or something, which was a spoof of Baz Luhrmann's Sunscreen.
Oh, yeah.
But in the style of, you know, in Viz Comic, they have top tips.
Yeah.
Where you say, oh, why don't you glue cornflakes to the wheels of your car so when you drive home, it sounds like you have a gravel drive, you know, those sort of things. But that never saw the light of day. They never had any success with records, really.
No compilation album. Not enough material for a compilation album, even. But it's... Yeah, Viz spin-offs are an interesting thing. And I say this because there are a couple of Viz spin-offs that are interesting. There is a Viz Top Tips video that Vic and Bob did that I seem to recall I bought from a service station bin type thing. You know, it's one of these ones. It's like, well, that's where that ended up.
There was actually a Vic and Bob Top Tips exhibition. There was an exhibition,
wow,
which I went to a long time ago, back in the 90s, I think, where they actually had exhibits which would represent the top tip. So you would have a wheel with cornflakes glued to it. I mean, yeah, proper Vic Reeves surrealism. But yeah, it was a proper art exhibition that I forgot all about that until now.
Yeah. Oh, right. Well, I do like the Viz Top Tips video. I think I always remember the one where it's to try and get your lawn to look like it's a Wembley pitch, is you just leave tarpaulin down to kill off some of the grass in stripes. And the other one was to stop your kids putting their elbows on the table when they're eating.
Bob, I'm going to ask you now to pour this cement on the table, if you
could. Cement?
Yes, just pour it on the middle.
Right.
That's it, lovely. Now, we'll smooth it out there, right across the table, east to west, north to south. We then simply sprinkle with broken glass.
Right.
Now, those children aren't going to put their elbows back on that table again, are they?
No, let's see. Put your balls back on. No elbows there, Vic, do you see?
No, not a thing.
yeah, fantastic.
But yeah, I suppose we better address, I don't know whether it's an elephant in the room or what, but there was a Fat Slags movie, wasn't there, Paul?
Ah! You swine! yes. It's not something on my showreel, put it like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, Fat Slags the movie. I mean, it was a good fun day's work. I won't deny it, but it wasn't The Godfather. No. Apparently, when they did the final cut, it was only an hour long. They had to go back and shoot some more.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
It was a strange day's filming because I had to learn to drive one of these holiday coaches round and round this sort of abandoned airfield. So I'd never driven a coach before, and that was quite an experience. I enjoyed doing that.
Yeah.
And then coming back to the unit base, sat in a car with Sophie Thompson and Fiona Allen in their Fat Slag suits, but naked. not the actual suits were naked.
Yeah, yeah.
And just sat with the Fat Slags naked in the back of a car, was, you know, squashed up. It was so funny. But yeah, they had a kind of haunted look in their eyes, which I think they knew even then. Oh God.
Yeah.
Why did we agree to this?
Yeah.
But it came and it went. You know, it was one of those things. It's a job.
Yeah, indeed.
But yeah, not on my showreel.
Yeah, not the British film industry's finest moment, unfortunately. But yeah, but it does speak to the fact that people want, you know, like Viz so much that they're willing to go to these efforts to do these spin-offs, whether they land well or not is a different matter. And perhaps I think Bags of Fun with Buster lands better than perhaps the Fat Slags movie maybe does.
Yes, I absolutely. I did like the Roger Melly cartoons with Peter Cook.
Oh yes, yeah,
and Harry Enfield. I thought they worked. I mean,
yeah,
that is the absolute perfect casting, isn't it? Peter Cook,
definitely.
Who, of course, Derek and Clive, obviously another influence on Viz Comic.
Tell you what, we haven't mentioned the B side of Johnny Japes and his gesticles.
Oh well, for a start, they recorded this in Swindon, in a studio above a motorcycle shop called Drive in Manchester Road. So if any Swindonians are listening, it can form an image for them, a picture for them. And they had absolutely no idea what to do for the B-side. But because in the 80s, by this time, they'd gone out of fashion, but scratch mixes were very popular. Yeah. It seemed, well, come on, scratchy. It was a bit of a no-brainer.
Yeah.
But Partridge said he had to audition Neville Farmer, Dave Gregsy, John Otway to see who had the best scratching sound on their trousers. And I think in the end they went for Dave Gregory because he had his cords. He said categorically it was not my actual scrotum I was scratching. He said, in fact, I'd rather completely forget about this record altogether. But yes, as a great guitarist, he had great chords, excuse the pun. And it's him rubbing his chords and pulling his zip fastener up and down. That was how they created the most disgusting B-side, I think, of all time, I have to say.
That's better.
Yes, if you don't know the what's actually happening on it, it does send your imagination off into some terrible places. Yeah, it'd be red raw.
Yes, well, this is it, but obviously Gregsy had the textured scratch effect on his trousers better than any of the others, so that was that.
Yeah, marvellous. I mean, one thing that we do keep coming to here anyway is this notion of the lewd record. And we were having a little chat yesterday about various different lewd records, which is clearly a tradition in music and always has been. I mean, the smutty or the lewd or the innuendo, or like even back, you know, the most famous early example being George Formby, you know, where he's got When I'm Cleaning Windows, which is just lewd.
Yes.
But he's also got Little Stick of Blackpool Rock, which is innuendo.
Yeah. I mean, these records were banned, weren't they? They were banned.
They were, yeah, yeah. And it's almost a badge of honour, really, to get the legacy of having been banned by the BBC. But we were talking, I think, about some things that sort of spin off from the... or some things that appear in the sort of 70s and 80s out of the back of punk again, really. And you mentioned some really disgusting records. I mean, like... you mentioned Judge Dredd earlier as well. I mean,
yes, he's in the Guinness Book of Records for having the most singles banned, apparently.
Yeah.
Because everything, they were really blue records. The first time I ever heard Judge Dredd, there was a compilation album that came out in the 70s of bubblegum pop, mainly from America, and novelty records called Goofy Greats on KTEL.
Yeah.
And sandwiched between Yummy, 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 I've Got Love in My Tummy and Judy in Disguise was Big Six by Judge Dredd, which blimey, is pure that's... filth.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not even going to sing it. It is so politically incorrect.
Yes.
Really. I mean, like I said, and he's doing it in this kind of faux Kingston accent. Yeah. But as a little kid, you know, to me, I thought, why is he singing about all these pussycats?
Yeah.
I just had no idea, you know. And stumped his middle wicket. Yeah.
Yeah. And yet it gets to number 11 in the charts, despite that.
Bible stood on the burning deck, playing a game of cricket. The ball rolled up his trouser leg and he stumped his middle wicket. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Well, of course, the other, if we're going to talk about someone who's, I would say, slightly more poetic with a bit more integrity than Judge Dredd, is the great Ian Dury.
Yeah.
And he's Blockheads. He was very much in that music hall tradition of doing these sort of cheeky, chirpy songs with hidden meanings. I mean, Hit Me With Your Rhythm Stick. I mean, it's transparently a sex record, isn't it, really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, it's a rap about how people do it around the world, you know, and Hit Me With Your Rhythm Stick. But you listen to stuff like This Is What We Find from Do It Yourself.
Home improvement expert Harold Hill of Harold Hill of do-it-yourself dexterity and double glazing skill. Came home to find another gentleman's kippers in the grill. So he sanded off his winkle with his Black and Decker drill.
Again, like the Bonzos, it's this sort of saucy seaside postcard humour where he's talking about winkles and you've got Billericay Dicky. So I loved growing up with all of these naughty songs.
Yeah, it's interesting, I suppose, the way punk sort of opened the door to... obviously the political stuff, but once you open that door, you can let all sorts of stuff through and your censorship starts to be something to toy with, to play with, rather than to avoid, I suppose. Yeah. It's an interesting thing. And then, of course, you have got that long strain of comedy and novelty records that have always somehow been in the charts through the little knowing wink. I mean, talking about winking, you've got Ivor Biggin's Winker's Song, brackets, misprint, close brackets.
And the Red Nose Burglars.
Yeah.
And he went on to be on That's Life, wasn't he? He was Dot Cox.
Indeed, yes.
Yeah, I'm a wanker, I'm a wanker, yeah.
And that gets to number 22 in the charts.
So. Really? It's astonishing.
Yeah. And it's in a sort of weird self-defeating way where these things become really popular, but you can't play them. You know, they can't be played on the radio or on TV, but then Top of the Pops has to acknowledge them and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, it's generally... especially with comedy punk records, it's the most reviled music genre, really. You had a lot of these sort of daft bands like Splodgenessa Bounds and Toy Dolls, Peter and the Test Tube Babies, and they do these sort of comedy punk stuff. Because it's basically music for immature men, isn't it, really? Or,
yeah.
13-year-old boys.
Yeah.
But I suppose, thinking about it, the master, who's like head and shoulders above everyone, is probably Eric Idle of this type of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a note about certainly one, just technically it's a Python song, which is, I bet you they won't play this song on the radio, which is on one of the Python records, which is basically
a series
of comedy censorship bleeps, which is fun.
You can't say on the radio or you can't even say I'd like to you someday unless you're a doctor with a very large. So I bet you they won't play.
And then also his song about the FCC he did as a solo song, all about being censored on American TV and radio.
Yeah, yeah. And the penis song, isn't it?
Not the Noel Coward song, I think it's called.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So he's a master at the lewd ditty.
Yeah, the thing with Eric Idle and Monty Python, of course, is they were, as a comedy thing, they were loved by bands. So there was like albums, bootleg albums of their stuff, really early days were being sort of taken around by people like Led Zeppelin, I think. But my thing is, as someone who's been in bands for a long time, one of the things we always do when we go on tour is that's when we buy Viz magazine as well. So Viz and music have always had this sort of weird relationship with that punk thing. And a friend of mine, Ben Baker, from the amazing Don't Let's Chart podcast a few years ago, wrote a brilliant sort of study of Viz, who, getting bored with music charts, started inventing their own charts and getting people to send stuff in. So there you go. I wonder if some of this single coming about was the notion that Viz had this, like, well, we're our own world of music. We've been getting people to send their own tapes in, but now we might as well do our own record as well, that leads to some of this sort of stuff.
Yeah, I think there is definitely a connection, because they've done a lot of album artwork. They did some artwork for the Toy Dolls. I think even they used to take the mickey out of Shaking Stevens.
Yeah.
And I think even he kind of embraced it and got them to do the artwork for one of his singles.
I've got it noted down here. It was a single in 1990 called I Might. And suddenly Stevens has taken them to his heart. He's adopted the Viz piss take about him.
Well, I think, sometimes if you're being ridiculed, you do sometimes have to just take it on the chin and go, yeah, all right. Like, for example, when I was doing Little Britain, they used to have a sketch where they took the piss out of Dennis Waterman, and he hated it, apparently. But then we did a comic relief show and he agreed to come on and be in the sketch, and it sort of gave him closure. It was fine. It's all right. You know, no one just thinks you're just, you know, that sums you up, this sketch, you know. And they could see it. If you're seen to have a sense of humour, then that's it. It's over. I think the only time that probably didn't work out was for Craig David and Bo Selector.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we all know where that ended anyway. Yeah.
Indeed. Ah, right. So let's start summing up about this record, though, because I think what I've not really asked you is, you know, as a record, do you like it? Is it good fun? Is it something you would occasionally come back to?
Well, it has a lot of sentimental value for me.
Yeah.
Because, like I say, I loved Viz Comic and I loved XTC. It was like Avengers Assemble, you know, get these two things together. And I had a friend I was at drama school with. It was a Geordie called Mark Lloyd. And he said, how can we get this single? And I said, well, they're doing a signing of the single. For some reason, I only got one single one of the singles signed. I just can't work out why. And I had a single, the one I have in my hand now, which wasn't signed by whoever it was. I can't remember where we had it signed. It was in a comic shop, but Mark wasn't there. And I came back, and the look on his face when I gave him this single, he was so happy.
Ah,
and sadly, we lost Mark a few years ago. So when I look at it and I hear it, I think of Lloydie.
Oh, that's nice.
it is a very funny single, and it's and I'm terrible at remembering lyrics.
Yeah,
some people, you know, they when a record comes on the radio, they can sing along. I think there's hardly any records that I'm able to know all the lyrics to, and this one, for some reason, like it's like an earworm. I'm pretty good with the lyrics on this. So for that, it's a triumph. But yeah, I think it's very funny. It's very childish. I mean, I love the puns in it. Like when he goes, "Oh, Buster, why did you let your sack swing so low?" And then he goes, "Sack swing so low?" Yeah.
Yeah.
And then John Otway plays his excruciating saxophone solo.
"Oh, Buster, why do you let your sack swing so low? Sack swing so low, yeah."
Yes, it's and that's very Bonzo Dog, that solo. It's I was going to mention that. I'm glad you mentioned that. That's my favourite little gag in there, and that's very Viz as well.
Yeah,
it's one of my favourite Viz gags ever. I think was in a Gilbert Ratchet where it's all about him entering the grand angling competition, but at the end it turns out to be a grand dangling competition.
Oh, God.
And I remember getting to that final panel and being absolutely, my sides, I was laughing that hard at that stupid joke. It was brilliant.
Oh, it's an amazing, it's had so much influence on British comedy. It cannot be underestimated, Viz Comic. And the only horrible byproduct, it's probably had an impact on advertising as well because of its attitude and it's kind of in your face. Yeah, it's one of the few things that actually makes me belly laugh. Like the others are Laurel and Hardy, Derek and Clive, you know.
Yeah.
Python. And I mean, obviously lots of things do. But Viz Comic is up there where it's just fantastic.
And so you've also had the opportunity to meet a lot of these people and say thanks as well, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, I've been very privileged in my life to have met all my heroes. And it's usually through friends or through the business. And, I have been able to say to them, there was a meeting once which I was invited along to, and I got to meet them. There was a TV meeting that Peter Serafinovich was going to collaborate on something, which never came to pass, sadly.
Yeah.
But I got to meet the boys and have become quite chummy, especially with Davy Jones, you know. You become friends with these people that you and you forget. Oh wow, and Davey, he gave me one of the original strips which I've got framed, and you know.
Oh, that's excellent.
Yeah, I love it. And then and then I got to meet XTC as a lifelong fan since Making Plans for Nigel, like most XTC fans.
Yeah.
See, I had a chance to meet and do a favour for them, and they're again delightful people, and so I feel very privileged to have met these people and say thank you. Yeah.
And it's all represented by this little 7 inches of plastic with a man with huge testicles on the front.
Yes. And which everyone wants to forget about.
Indeed.
Partridge said that they did it for free.
Yeah.
As a reward, they were offered a lifetime subscription to Viz.
Wow.
Which if you add it up, what is it? How many? 8 issues a year? Since 1987, that's not a bad fee.
No, given it's still going, like we say, 300 issues and counting.
Well, he added, they only gave us a year in the end. Cheap buggers, yeah. So, yeah, it is a swollen folly. No one bought it. I think you could, you had to buy it through the comic.
Yeah.
But if someone's got boxes of these in their attic or in the office under a table filing cabinet, you should incrementally stick them out.
Yeah.
And get beer money every week if you're going to sell it for a tenner a pop.
Yeah, you can manipulate the market with flooding it for a little while, pulling it back for a little while, make a bit of money.
Yeah. The other bit I love about it is the way it opens with the rugby. Swing low, swing fast.
Sweet
just a brunette. How you gonna carry them home?
It is a stupid, infantile record, but there's a lot more going on with ideas in it that it deserves probably a bit more credit.
Yeah, indeed.
And of course it has, which let's not spoil it for the listeners, a fabulous punchline.
Indeed it does. I won't even include a clip of that. I'll let people go and discover it for themselves. I'll link to all the YouTube videos and things like that, as usual, so people can enjoy, a bit like my joy at the Gilbert Ratchet strip, they can listen through to the final panel, as it were, of the song and enjoy that joke.
Yeah. So who thought we could talk this long about a record no one bought 33 years ago?
Well, the question will be, who'll listen through this long to us talking about a record that no one bought?
I know.
Hopefully lots of people.
Oh, Buster, yeah.
I think that's a perfect place to end, and I'm really, really pleased for you've brought this along and been able to give us some insider insight into the making of this record as well. So thank you very much, Paul.
Yeah, well, it's been an absolute pleasure, and thank you for inviting me on the podcast.
Not a problem. Cheers.
Not like that, that tickles. Oh. Isn't it?